there, Deadpan. This is CJ, and I am at the Phoenix Zoo Brew 2009, where at 9:40, the Go-Go's are going to perform on that stage over there where you hear that hair band playing in the background, which is called 68 Guns. Anyway, so here's the thing. I thought, who better to drunk dial than Deadpan? Because here's the thing about the Zoo Brew. You get a card with 12 little boxes on it, and for every box you get a drink. It's like a little drink, but when your little drink is like equivalent to 3 shots of vodka, it's not so little. Dan has already used 6 of his punch card.
7
of his punch card squares, because he just got a fancy dancy margarita from the Macayo's booth. But anyway, it took me 3 drinks because of the vodka to be like spinning wee. So anyway, and on that note, I hate to mix this up like it is, but I have a dumbass memory, which is better told all intoxicated, so I can screw it up as completely much as possible. So, okay. I was watching this video that, now I think it was the Energizer Bunny sent the link to, about the Tesla coil playing Ghostbusters, and it reminded me of my brother who built the Tesla coil back when we were kids, teenagers or whatever, and his girlfriend was over for dinner, and he says, hey, I want to show you my Tesla coil. But what she heard him say was, hey, I want to show you my testicle. I remember that so well. It was a great story. So I thought I'd tell you that, and it's a dumbass memory. And, yeah. So I'm going to go drink some more. And if you're lucky, I'll call again when I'm more drunk and the Go-Go's are on stage. Rock on, Deadpan.
When Voskovec has made his intentions clear, but he deals in herring, and he always smells of herring. Do you know he even bought me herring-scented cologne?
Really? That's probably why the cat follows you around.
The Deadpan.
Love is everything, Boris. I want to meet some man and scale the heights of passion. Some man who embodies the 3 great aspects of...
The Deadpan.
The Greasy Jellybean Game. Duel of the Fates. Stolen lyrics. Stolen paragraphs out of your favorite books.
Well, there's not too many of us around, but it can be done.
So many women settle cheaply.
I know, poor things.
They marry for money.
Money? Well, money.
But I tell you, I feel as though my life would be wasted if I didn't love deeply with a man whose mind I respected, whose spirituality equaled mine, and who had the same, lustful appetite for...
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
...that drives me insane.
You're an incredibly complex woman.
I guess you could say I'm half...
Deadpanite.
...half whore.
Here's hoping I get the half that eats.
Hey, Jack. This is Used Hair from New York calling in with stolen song lyrics. Late last night, while wishing on a star, down from the sky came a man in a car. He said, get in, Jackson. Come on, let's go for a ride, out of sight. Sitting in the cockpit, strapped down in a chair, I said, hey, tell me, what's that over there? He said, meet my computer, he's a friendly son of a gun, and we're having fun. Playing cards on Venus, in a cloudy room, past a glass of ammonia, I got to get off soon. Sunbathing on Mercury, or jamming on Jupiter, which do you prefer? It's getting pretty late. I got to go home. Nice to have met you. What's your telephone? Maybe soon I'll call you. If I can afford the fare, it's long distance out there. Amos of Uranus, he's a friend of mine. He's a first-rate party and a real fine time. That's Amos of Uranus from Klaatu. Thank you.
Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 127. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Eddie Money. Yeah. I actually don't have a dearth of content this week. Thank you. You're still welcome to send more stuff. Email address is sphericaljackm@gmail.com or call the voicemail 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. You're definitely welcome, but I appreciate all the stuff that I have received. And in this episode, you're actually going to hear 2, count them, 2 bits of original audio fiction. One is the next installment of the Questers from FPM. or FPM by Amy Bowen. So that's exciting. And something else from another one of our longtime literary contributors. In the meantime, I should have been dead on a Sunday morning, banging my head. No time for mourning, ain't got no time. Flexing vocabulary runs right through me. The alphabet runs right from A to Z. Well, I'm an axe grinder, pile driver. Mother says that I never mind her. Got no brains, I'm insane. Teacher says that I'm one big pain. I'm like a laser, six-string razor. I got a mouth like an alligator. I want it louder, more power. I'm gonna rock you till it strikes the hour. Insane in the membrane. I'm fergalicious. My body staying vicious. I be up in the gym just working on my fitness. He's my witness. Won't you come with me to a place in a little town? The only way to get there is to go straight down. There's no bathroom and there is no sink. The water out of the tap is very hard to drink. Very hard to drink. Whoa, look what you've done to this rock and roll clown. There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. You say that money isn't everything, but I'd like to see you live without it. You think you can keep on going, living like a king? Ooh, babe, but I strongly doubt it. Very hard to drink. You're gonna wait too, fat boy. Fat boy, wait until tomorrow.
Okay, Jack, so I wanted to tell you the sad story of my friend Jim. Jim, well, he went by Jimmy in high school. We were pretty close, as high school friends go, always shooting the breeze whenever we had a spare moment. What girls in our class we'd do, what the new crop of freshmen looked potentially hot, celebrities we'd spank to. Jimmy had a thing for Cheryl and Fenn, you know, Audrey Horne from Twin Peaks. I'm horny for Horne, he'd say. So, one day he tells me he had this picture of her. I don't know, some kind of a magazine, People, TV Guide, something like that. This is before she did that Playboy spread, which I don't want to think about how sticky his copy got when that came out. Anyways, so he had this People magazine and he spanked to it repeatedly. So much, he said, that he got a crack in it. Not the picture, no. It. He spanked it till it bled. And the weird part, as if there hadn't been a weird part yet, the weird part was it didn't stop him. He was so far gone into the wank that he finished bleeding. I told him to look into getting some hand lotion, some baby oil, and possibly some professional counseling. Eventually, I went away to college and I lost touch with him for a few years. After Montana and that little bit of Nebraska, I moved back here. So, one St. Patrick's Day, I was out carousing in St. Paul, drinking yards of crappy green beer, you know, like the yard-long, skinny, plastic novelty beer glasses. And, of course, to make green beer, it's best to start out with a really, really yellow one. Ugh. Anyhow, this place had this banner, and it proclaimed they had Minnesota's biggest St. Patty's party animal, Patty O'Bear. Loud music started up, and out of the back room, there came a guy, and he was running into the room wearing a green bear suit. It was so green it was hard to look at, and it was kind of like a badly executed knockoff of a Care Bear, but he had a frothy green mug on his chest. It was a bad suit, as a lot of mascots go, except it had the genius addition of a practical mouth. Patty O'Bear could drink, and he drank a lot. He danced and jumped and staggered his way around the bar, pounding yards and making party girls giggle. The next thing you know, Patty O'Bear, green, beer-soaked, furry Patty, he's right beside me, a fact I was trying to ignore. Paul? I turned, surprised. The muffled voice of the bear said my name. Paul? It's Jim. Jimmy? So, we were back in touch, sort of. Though, by now, his life was marked by drunken excess I was simply unable to relate to. He still didn't know when to stop. In that category, he was fired the very next year from the Patty gig after flirting too heavily with one of the girls, putting his paws where they weren't wanted. So the rest of this I pieced together from various police and media reports. One Tuesday morning in June, Jim put on his Patty O'Bear suit and drove to the Mall of America. He had in his system a whole brew of chemicals, including, but not limited to, alcohol, Xanax, marijuana, ecstasy, and just a dash of PCP, possibly from the joint that he smoked. Needless to say, he wasn't thinking clearly. He wandered into the mall and walked around without an apparent purpose. At some point, he probably pissed his pants as the complaint filled out by the mother of a 5-year-old that he kind of bothered stated that he smelled of urine and stale beer. Now, the Mall of America security confronted him on the 4th floor. Maybe he was headed for one of the bars up there, you know, looking for a job as a party animal. Security asked him to remove the bear suit, and he refused. Later, they found he'd gone commando in the bear suit, so that was probably why he didn't take it off. Now, he'd built this suit himself, you know. They don't provide those, apparently. He made it himself, went in, got that job, and when he was fired, he took it with him. But he made it himself, and he'd got a lot more articulation in the joints of it, you know, because he had to be able to dance around and perform all of his hijinks. So it was a bit of a surprise to Mall of America security. They had him surrounded on 3 sides, and suddenly he threw a leg over the glass wall and he jumped. Now, they're not sure if it was suicide or if he thought the fountain 4 floors below was a safe target, but Jim's story ended on the edge of that fountain with a broken neck. You've been listening to The Sad Tale of Jimmy, Life and Death of a Party Animal, a work of fiction by Paul Mackey, read by the author. And I do want to stress, this is a work of fiction. Anybody I might have known in high school named Jim or Jimmy has absolutely nothing to do with this story. It is 100% fiction. All right, Jack, back to the deadpan.
Fucking thing again.
Happy birthday, Paul Mackey. Unrelated. V equals V for Vendetta.
Hi, this is Christopher Moore, world famous unknown author on Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep listening.
So therefore, and finally back to V. I've not read it, but I'm one of the masses on this one. I've not read the literature, but I saw the film. It was a good movie.
Really?
It was a smart movie, and it was bold. And it came out shortly after, you know, the horrific September 11th. It came out shortly afterwards with a message sort of not condoning what Bin Laden did, but sort of saying, you know, I've touched on this on Watchmania, you know, what again, condoning these horrific events, not condoning, but presenting them in a light where you can sort of see the motive behind it.
Right.
And again, I'm not going to speak for Alan Moore, but I'm not going to say that Alan Moore thinks that the September 11th attacks were a good thing. I don't get that impression. I think what he did with V and what he did with Watchmen, you know, were not condoning, you know, flying planes full of people into the World Trade Center. I don't think that's what his message was. But I think, anyway, I think V for Vendetta spoilers now, but I think it was a good film. And I will read that too. I'll definitely put that on my list of things to read. But what my final question for you as we wrap this up is, you know, Watchmen is, as I said on Watchmania, it's Shakespearean in how many references, how many things. There's so many brilliant little things that you spot just from one panel to the next, one little, you know, bit of symmetry. Does V for Vendetta have that kind of depth and richness to it that Watchmen does?
Oh, absolutely. I believe, because, you know, the thing about V, and that's something that I felt I will say both books do equally well, is you'll see stuff at the beginning. You'll see these little hints, these little, you know, clues. And then they all tie back, and at the end, and then all of a sudden you sit there and you're like, I should have seen that coming. Why the hell didn't I see that coming? You know, it's a bit like, not even Shakespeare. I would actually describe it closer to something that Agatha Christie would write in one of the Hercule Poirot mysteries. All these little details that you just kind of gloss over or Hercule picks up and goes, huh, that's interesting. And you go, okay, that's something important. In both V for Vendetta and in Watchmen, there are all these little things that just that you get told, or there's a brief flash or something, and then all of a sudden, bam, you know, and then it's brought to light. I felt more surprised by things in V for Vendetta than I did in Watchmen. And you know, oh man, if the community wants to burn me in effigy, then fine, you know, just so long as they put me in the cool mask, you know. I did find that I just feel that V for Vendetta is truly a masterpiece. I think Watchmen is an important work, but V is the masterpiece. And and now that you've said what you said, I'm thinking I might have to go on ahead and check out the movie. I was very nervous. I was very nervous considering the recent stuff that had happened. But you know, I can go on ahead and loosen up and give it a shot.
Well, you might hate it because obviously we came at it from different viewpoints.
But if I go in thinking to myself the way I'm going to do, because I am still going to go see Watchmen. But if I go in there and think to myself, okay, I accept the fact that there's no way they're going to cram all this into one volume, I think I'll be okay.
Right. All right. Well, I'm going to shut us down, T.
Okay, bro.
We're pushing 40 minutes on my little counter.
Quality, and it's all quality, baby.
It is all good. But yes, you had your own little private Watchmania, basically, here.
I guess this will be Watchmania 4, and then we can always do the amendment at the end, me saying, okay, I saw the film. Here's my thoughts in 5 minutes or less.
possibly, yes. But, you know, we really didn't talk that much about Watchmen. You talked about Alan Moore stuff, so it's actually...
This actually Alan may be, in general.
Yeah, so now this has been valuable, and this might actually be part 4, I think, because we'll probably do... I'm assuming we're going to get lots of feedback. I don't know. I'll figure it out. But this is – no, you're right. It's been 40 minutes of quality stuff, so this will definitely find its way out onto Deadpan. And that's been. And thank you, T, for being on. And everyone can find T. Morris's stuff at tmorris.com and imaginethatstudios.com.
Yep.
And the order's up. And and at adriansmed.com.
You got me.
No.
Damn you, Zmed!
No T. Morris stuff at that site yet.
Yet.
Right. So thank you, T. Actually, this is, like I said, I mean, this has been very rich. And someday people will look back on this and go, that was one of the most important bits of recording ever put out. So thanks for being on Deadpan again, T, and you're absolutely welcome. You know, you've been on Deadpan more than any other guest, I think, but that's a good thing, and you're welcome to come back anytime.
Okay, hey, thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot.
Jack, I'm so disappointed in you. You killed my plants, Jack. Yes, you left me with dead plants. Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Deadpan is the way.
The Questers from FPM. A Serial by Amy Bowen. Episode 5. The Traveling Merchant. The Centaur Court was much like every marketplace the travelers had ever seen before, with a few noticeable differences. Everyone was moving at an easy, relaxed pace. No one seemed to be hurrying or pushing their way through the crowds. The rows of stalls were spaced further apart than they would be in a typical marketplace in the living world. This extra open space was occupied by acrobats, musicians, and other kinds of performers. There were many more performers than the questers were used to seeing in marketplaces, and yet no one was throwing coins at them. Instead, when one of them finished performing, someone in the audience would give him an object. John and Amy led the way through the marketplace. Their whole party scanned the stalls for any merchant who had spices to sell. At first, they saw none. Then, when they reached the end of a row of stalls, something caught Joe's eye. It was a large, many-wheeled mechanical contraption made of shining brass and steel. The shorter front section of the contraption had pipes and rivets everywhere, as well as a set of steps leading up to a seating compartment for the driver. The longer rear section was an unadorned rectangular metal box, long enough and tall enough for many people to stand inside. Joe counted 9 brass wheels on the side of the contraption he could see.
"Hey, look,"
said Joe.
"I think that's Gaudat Imptor."
"Wow," said Amy. "Let's go see." They approached the man standing at the bottom of the steps leading up to the driver's compartment. He had the look of one who had seen many years of travel. He wore a plain, comfortable shirt and pants, and a cap with a bill. The cap had the words Infinity Trucking Company embroidered on it.
"Hello! You must be Trucker Overdrive."
"My reputation precedes me,"
said Trucker Overdrive, taking Joe's hand.
"Oh, you're living people. What brings you to the Centaur Court?"
"Well, we're looking for garlic salt. It's a little awkward, but we needed to get rid of an undead microbe infection, which I hope I didn't just pass on to you."
"You didn't. I've been dead for a while. Undead microbes won't affect me."
"Oh, good. I mean, good about the not infecting you, not so much about the being dead bit. Sorry."
The merchant nodded understandingly.
"I do happen to have some underworld garlic salt. But what will you give me in return?"
Joe looked at Amy, who said, "We have 5,000 FPM crowns."
"FPM crowns are no good down here. I need something more real."
"What do you mean?"
"Well, it turns out to be true what they say. You can't take money with you when you die. Or at least not very much of it. So, except for the ferryman, nobody down here ever uses money. Instead, we barter for things, using either goods or deeds as payment. If you want my garlic salt, you'll have to do something useful or interesting that benefits me and the other patrons of this marketplace. Unless you have stuff that you're willing to trade."
"I have this old dead pan,"
said Ed.
"I was told to give it to a blacksmith and tell him to reforge it into whatever he wants. Would that help?"
"That's a good start. That'll only earn you enough garlic salt for yourself, though not enough for the whole party. I suggest you all work together to do something."
"I see. We will discuss our payment among ourselves and report back to you. Please excuse us for a moment." The group followed Amy away from the vehicle called Gaudat Imptor. When they were standing at the far corner of one of the intersections between rows, out of Trucker Overdrive's earshot, Amy stopped and they all gathered into a tight circle. "Well, to tell you the truth, I don't have a clue what we can all do together. We're not all martial artists or magicians or anything. Any ideas?"
"We could put on a play,"
said John.
"You can't be serious,"
said Wanderwolf.
"Why not?"
"We're not all actors, either."
"We don't all have to be. You won't have to say a word if you don't want to. I can do all the talking and everyone else can act out the parts. Anyway, Trucker Overdrive only said that we had to do something together. He didn't say we had to do it well."
"You've got a point. I'll ask him about that when we go back to talk to him again. But for now, let's assume you're right about that, John. I think putting on a play is a great idea. Unless someone has another suggestion, I say we do it." No one had any other suggestions. "All right, that's what we'll do then."
"Which of our country's stories shall we reenact?"
John was very excited about the prospect.
"The story of the uber-nemesis and his quest for the armor of the Kraken?"
"There aren't enough parts in that for all of us to play. Anyway, it's too long and complicated. I think we should pick something short and simple, something we won't have to spend too much time preparing. That means it should be something we all know pretty well, too."
"I agree."
John looked at Rhea.
"Hey, Rhea. Didn't I hear you say something last night about taking a few lessons from the rabbit of Kaer Banog?"
"Yes."
Mischief gleamed in Rhea's eyes.
"Are you thinking what I think you're thinking?"
"Well, let's see. Can you jump that far?"
"Yes. I can act scary and play dead, too."
We're definitely thinking the same thing.
What are you two thinking?
We're thinking we should do the Killer Rabbit sketch as our play.
You guys are awesome. I say we do it.
Can I be Bors?
Of course. Everybody can be whoever they want to be. Does anyone else have a preference?
I kind of want to be Tim.
Okay, then. I'll be King Arthur,
said Jeremy.
I'll be Sir Galahad.
That leaves me to be Brother Maynard, right?
That's right.
Great. Now that we have an idea of what we can do, let's go tell Trucker Overdrive and find out if he'll accept our play as payment. We can work out the rest of the details later.
Okay. Let's go.
Zach Taylor was an ordinary art therapist until one day he met patient Martin Grace, a blind suspected serial killer. Now, Zach's on the run, hunted at every turn by an evil that can read his mind and knows what frightens him most. But you can help him become Zach's patient. Help him survive the onslaught of the Dark Man. Personal Effects, Dark Art. A novel by J.C. Hutchins and Jordan Weissman. Scott Sigler, author of Infected and Contagious, calls dark art a rocking genre mash that mixes mystery with psychodrama and serves it up in a high-bandwidth torrent of terror. Coming June 2009, visit darkartnovel.com for more details.
Listening to The Questers from FPM, a serial by Amy Bowen. Thanks to Justa Joe, Jack Jaffe, Ed from Texas, Paul Mackey, Jack Hosley, Rhea Dinas, and Chris Kolisch for contributing their voices to this episode. The music heard in this episode was Journey's End by Guardian Mind Mix, available at the PodSafe Music Network.
Nobody loves you, but don't feel special. Nobody is a dirty, dirty whore. This is Marlo Diane, and you are listening to The Deadpan.
So this turned out to be kind of an atypical deadpan. And I guess if a-hole is sort of a nicer way of saying asshole, then what is atypical? Is there such a thing as ass-typical? Anyway, we did not do greasy spoon comments. In this episode, we did we had a couple of surprises, and we had a couple of long bits, and a couple of your actually a decent number of your contributions did not get into this episode, but that was to make room for the longer bits. Yes, someone make a funny joke about longer bits. But I have some excellent stuff. Some of you guys have really gone with the bad lyrics meme. And when I started out editing this, putting this episode together, I thought we were going to have more of the bad lyrics. But I assure you, if you want to play, then get me your bad lyrics. I gave you the contact info at the top of the show. It's 206-350-TOMI or email me sphericaljackm@gmail.com. Yeah. Thank you for all the contributions. You guys rock. Thank you for everything. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. And you guys are all very good friends of mine. And that's it. Thank you. It's been fun. I think this is actually a good episode of long-winded content. That conversation with T. Morris actually marked the end of the Watchmania stuff. Yeah, that went for a really freaking long time. But of course that means it's time to start thinking about the next Palooza. So start thinking about the next movie or book or whatever that we should cover for the next big discussion. Anyway, that's it. I'm not going to outro babble any further. Thank you for listening to Deadpan. Oh yeah, one more thing. The outro babble never ends. It's going to be like a 2-hour show. But some of you have heard how I sometimes have others join in on Skype, and we read out the comments. We've had some excellent guests come on and do it. It's usually people who aren't prolific commenters, but I want to open the door. If you're interested in playing, then I would love to... the only requirement is that you have Skype and that you be... you'd be able to work with me to schedule a time. But I'd like to have other people play along to read comments, especially on unshows, but, sometimes they'll work their way into regular deadpans as well. And that is it. I'm not going to talk anymore.
Zones, the man and those that bought the farm, those that run the scam in the news. On the news. When the new land hits, we'll all see this. Division splits, all my love kicks and kicks in the news. Struggles through. I'm hard, then ripped, and then broke into the new. Oh, in the new. Run through. Well, I know your garden's full, yet I see myself and you in the new. In the new. Do all I can do. Each moment struggles through. I'm hard, then ripped, and then broke into the new. Those that bought the farm, those that run the scam in the news.